Good day, good people. I'm Brother Robert Farrell. Welcome to Contemplative Inner Beings Wisdom Wednesday. Wisdom Wednesday is recorded live here on Crowdcast. If you will, let me know in the chat section that you can hear me okay. And we invite all of our podcast and YouTube listeners to join us live each Wednesday here on Crowdcast at 6 p.m. Central. That way you too can become part of the conversation and dialogue that happens here. Whether you are here for the live session or you are enjoying the recording, thank you for being here. You know, wisdom is knowing with more of you. It's knowing deeper. It's not just knowing more. And Wisdom Wednesday is an invitation to open to those depths of yourself, your intellect, of your will, of your emotions, to really open to the ground of wisdom. And that is the transformation of the human heart and consciousness, a deeper, richer awareness. Today we're going to encounter three brief wisdom contemplations, and each one's going to be followed by a minute of silence where you're invited to the spiritual practice of resonate, reflect, respond, rest. It's a lexia divina in a way. Resonate. Does something connect with you? It might be symbolized by a single word or phrase you hear, something that creates an aha or a sparkle or glimmer. Reflect, an opportunity to ponder deeply, to meditate with images and thoughts. Respond. You can respond in all kinds of ways, by journaling, by body movement, by prayer. And rest, just to simply be silent and open to the presence and action of divine love in your life. And after those three reflections and periods of contemplative silence, we'll close with a spiritual practice. We like to share one with you each week. And then we'll enter into a group dialogue. And today's theme is bias from the bottom. So with an open heart, a calm, centered presence, take a gentle breath. Touch your heart if you'd like to really connect with listening from that place instead of this place. Together we'll begin. The Exodus journey is something that became an externalized and internalized journey, which is how true spirituality always is. And the Exodus journey allowed an enslaved group to go through a liberation experience. Remember, it begins with a burning bush experience of God. It's a nature experience, which is very often our very first religious experience, to be there in nature. And this contemplative burning bush experience, it comes and it immediately has social, economic, and political implications. There really is no authentic God experience which doesn't situate us in the world in a different way and cause us to see things and act accordingly. This is really a nice little definition of the spiritual life, to situate us in the world in a different way and to cause us to see things differently and act accordingly. In the Hebrew scriptures, they reveal that Yahweh, compassionately hearing and seeing the dire difficulties experienced by the least in society. Now, when the poor today read the story, they can see that they are not alone in their cruel predicament in contemporary America. Sometimes, as we might say, it's a little too close to home. But these biblical stories of Exodus feature an oppressed people who suffered at the hands of brutal taskmasters. They were accused falsely. They were pursued by forces of prejudice. They went through periods of anxiety, fear, and doubt about the future, at times longing for a return to their former status in an inhumane system. And they quarreled with their leaders while doggedly continuing along the way to freedom. The Exodus theme is that the hope of deliverance cancels out the pain, and it gives today's poor the strength to keep on keeping on. One of the few subversive texts in history is the Bible. The Bible is most extraordinary because it repeatedly and invariably legitimizes the people on the bottom, not the people on the top. It's often not till somebody says this do you go back and read it and go, oh my goodness, it's right there. The rejected sons, the barren women, sinners, lepers, or outsiders, they are always the ones chosen by God. It becomes rather obvious when it's pointed out to us. In every case, just look, we are presented with some form of powerlessness, and from that situation, God creates a new kind of power. And this is the constant pattern found in plain sight. See, election has nothing to do with worthiness, but only divine usability. Hope you can feel the difference there between being worthy and being open to, available to divine usability. And in the Bible, usability normally comes from having walked through one's own wrongness or littleness. The pattern, the last will be first and the first will be last, really does appear to be apparent here. The privileged position of the most victimized victim is the absolutely unique and revolutionary perspective of the Gospels. And without this bias from the bottom, religion just kind of ends up defending propriety instead of human pain, the status quo instead of the suffering masses, triumphalism instead of truth, clerical privilege instead of charity and compassion. And all of this from the Christianity that was once, according to Scripture, quote, turning the whole world upside down. From here, we take a moment to resonate, reflect, respond, and rest. when we are looking for God. God is present among us in the poor and the suffering ones, the sickest, the hungriest, the smelliest, the most neglected, the most condemned. And how we treat them is a direct indication of our love of God. Spirituality that is not concrete is not real. And our spirituality is how we hammer out the meaning of our encounter with God here, now, in this place, with these people, in the midst of this struggle. And whatever our circumstances, God comes to us in the poor and oppressed and invites us to open up our lives. And when we do share, when we do welcome, when we do invite, when we find ourselves, that's when we find ourselves in the glad company of a loving God. We are no longer alone. We are not abandoned. This preferential option for the poor displays the universality of God's love for all. A love that, in a world structured to the benefit of the powerful, extends even to the least among us. Because God's love is clearest there. Like a mother who tends most tenderly to the weakest and threatened of her children, so it is with God's care for the poor. And the call of the gospel is for us to do the same, to make the same option, to show that God's love is universal by focusing our attention on the most threatened among us. That is solidarity in action. Now, friends, heaven and hell are not so much places that we end up in the afterlife or places of reward and punishment, but rather they are moments in relationship. Their lived experience here and in the time that follows our sojourn on this earth. The sense of heaven rests in the connection and interwoven sense of life that is organic to community. That's interbeing. And hell, well, hell might be imagined as those times of severe dislocation and removal and disconnection to community and family. But God understands the heavy burdens we bear. As one who walked the removal road with us, who suffered such loss and indignations, who would hold us close and carry us to a place of healing and renewal. So ideas of heaven and hell, well, they're concepts that are part of all creation. And heaven and hell exist within and beyond the confines of our world of space and time. And we can participate in heaven now by living in harmony and respect with all of creation. Or we can live in hell by bringing greed and selfishness and disease upon the whole earth. But we are endowed by the Creator with power to live our lives for the well-being of all. and all really does mean all in God's eyes. Her wisdom is beyond our capability. Heaven and hell are about living or not in right relationship with all of creation, of honoring or dishonoring all, and then knowing the love of God by sharing it with all our relatives. Relatives includes human, plants, trees, four-legged, winged, watered, and earth, all woven together in interbeing. So let us interbe in the silence and take a moment to resonate, reflect, respond, and rest. Now, the Master Yeshua, Jesus, taught nonviolence, lived nonviolently, and died nonviolently, but this goes right over our heads. We can't see it because we've spent 1700 years interpreting Scripture from the top. And reading Scripture from the bottom is the key to what liberation theology calls the preferential option for the poor, or the bias from the bottom. And apart from conversion, until the ego is transformed, everybody wants to be at the top. Right? American Idol. And we have made an idol out of it. Apart from grace, we don't see anything valuable at the bottom. And for some reason, the church thought that linking up with power was a good way to spread the gospel message. In truth, the church kind of became embarrassed by Jesus, you know, the powerless one. Most churches kind of do the same in their own way. And we feel more comfortable with power than we do powerlessness. Who wants to be powerless? You know, being powerless, it doesn't look like a way of influence. It doesn't look like a way of access. It doesn't look like a way that is one that is going to make any difference. And we can't hear what we're not ready to hear. Remember that phrase that we must forgive them. They know not what they do. If we are on the top, any critique of the top is unhearable. And this is where action and contemplation are linked together in the contemplative journey. Unless we see this, it's really a necessary humiliation of the ego, and it is a defeat of the false self. And unless we see it, we don't undergo any basic transformation. And our contemplative practices of especially going into the silence, they certainly can bring you into contact with being powerless. Nothing there for you to do or control. So let us take a moment and go there and practice to be powerless, to resonate, reflect, respond, and rest. Friends, before I share our spiritual practice, I would just like to also reflect on the scriptures that you see so often where Jesus is encouraging people to go and serve the poor. We have probably all heard sometimes in our lives, whether in church or Sunday school or some other group, about how important it is for us to be charitable, whether it's cleaning up trash on the sidewalk, or helping the homeless, or feeding the hungry at a soup kitchen, or packing lunches for children. And this isn't about doing something to please God. That is not Jesus' message here. Theologically, it's called reverse mission. But Jesus isn't asking us to do this to please God. He's asking us to do this to meet God. It will be our contact with those less fortunate, the people at the bottom, the powerless, that will transform us through relationship. Because being at the bottom, you don't feel like you are someone that is enough. And our spiritual practice today comes from Kyra Jewel-Lingo, who was a former resident of Plum Village and student of Thich Nhat Hanh. We could call this practice breathing in enoughness. So together, let's begin our practice by finding a comfortable position of dignity and ease. Let's really take our seats. Let's really occupy this moment. if there are parts of ourselves somewhere else, in some other time, past or future, invite them all to come back. We will be here. We will be now. And settling into just being here with all the tumult that may be in your life, you can still breathe in and out with presence, recollecting yourself. Take a moment and just feel the contact between your body and the floor or the chair, whether through the soles of your feet or your legs. And just know how the earth is supporting you in this moment. Allow the in-breath and the out-breath just to flow naturally. Simply experience how the breath arrives, you know, what happens as you breathe in. And then feel how the out-breath just does what it does quite naturally. So breathing in, aware of the body, and breathing out, allowing the body to rest, calming the body. Aware of the body with the in-breath, calming, resting with the out-breath. If you happen to notice that your mind wanders into thinking or planning or worrying, just acknowledge that it's happening. Acknowledge that you know that you can return to focusing on your thoughts later. For now, just engage again with the exercise of attending to this moment. Inhale and open up. Open up to the awareness that this moment is enough. That what we need, it's already here. And as you exhale, practice to accept that life is as it is in this moment. Allow it to be here just as it is. Inhaling the sense of enoughness, of contentment, that actually things are okay right here and right now. We don't need anything more. And our exhaling, or we're exhaling acceptance of how things are. Breathing in enoughness. Breathing out acceptance. And as we say goodnight to our podcast and YouTube listeners, we remind everyone that love is the way. that you are love, that you are enough just as you are. So stay awesome and be love. We hope to see you again soon.